Hello and welcome to episode 15 of It's Funny Now, stories you're glad didn't happen to you. My name is Frank Trainer. I'm the creator and producer of the show where people tell stories that maybe were embarrassing, cringy, terrifying, disgusting, shameful, even sad sometimes when they happened. But with the help of time, we can say, it's funny now. Our show is recorded live at The Crow in Santa Monica, California. That's the new comedy club for Elevated Comedy in Los Angeles. It happens every second Tuesday of the month. And on this podcast, you will hear the best stories to come out of that stage. On today's episode, we have John Taylor with his story, Vegas is Calling.
I'm in the hospital room, and I'm just meeting characters of my brother's life. And as a grown man, I'm asking some gambler named Minnesota Fat Joe what happened during the last year of my brother's life.
John is a touring comedian who performs all over the country, and you can catch him on season one of Eliza's Locals. He was recently part of the Minnesota Comedy Festival, and he has a 30-minute special on YouTube that you should totally check out. And now, without further ado, here is John with his story, Vegas is Calling.
I'm going to tell you guys about the worst time, worst episode of my life that I had, and probably my favorite place on earth, okay? So let's start with my favorite place. Favorite place on earth is Las Vegas, right? I mean, what can't you do there? Anything. My mom, growing up, I used to go to Las Vegas like weekends. My mom used to just put us in the minivan, and we used to drive to the Circus parking lot, spend the night in the fucking parking lot, wake up, tokens, all you can eat, ice cold Hawaiian punch, and then drive home. And that was heaven. And it was cheaper than Disneyland, so it made sense, you know? And it was always one of my dreams to perform there. And I do perform there. I perform there often, and I get to talk to the dealers. And the cool thing about talking to the dealers is you get to, like, learn a lot about the ins and outs of the cities. And one thing you do when you talk to dealers is whenever they get to meet you and you shake their hands, they do this. They rub their hands together, snap twice, and flutter. If you shake their hand, they'll rub their hands together, snap twice, and flutter, and they do that to let you know that, like, they're not handing any chips, and they're showing to the cameras that this is it, this is all they have. You do that when you shake their hands, and they do that at the end of the shift. And I was thinking that'd be so cool to do in real life, like, if you take a girl out, and you're like, hey, baby, we're gonna go get the Fridays 2 for $20, and she goes, well, I'd like to get a drink. You go, no, see, that's all that we're gonna do tonight. It's just what was said. So, growing up, I actually grew up in a single-parent home. It was my mom, my brother, and my two sisters, okay? And my dad wasn't there. My dad wasn't there, but he named my brother after him, Carl Taylor Jr. So my dad wasn't there, but his credit score was. And we put so much shit in his name. Do you understand? Like, we grew up with all the cable channels, and then we, like, graduated to the point where my sister graduated from high school, and for her celebration, we had a Cessna plane fly over the ceremony with good luck at UCLA, Trisha Taylor, during the valedictorian speech. She wasn't the valedictorian, and she was just there, and we ruined that poor girl's speech. And this is before Instagram, so, like, nobody has videos, but that valedictorian definitely remembers that day. You understand? Like, she's still bitter. So my brother was the guy who put the masculinity in me. We used to wake up at 5 a.m. and shoot basketball and, like, juggle and work on my skills because I was going to go to the NBA. Like, that was the thing. We're waking up at 5 a.m, we're going to shoot the NBA, but then I only became 5'11", so I have an office job. So, you know, like, it didn't work out, but the effort was there. The effort was there. So during the latter years of my brother's life, he just disappears. He goes missing for, like, the last 7 years of his life. And, like, nobody can find him. And this is before MySpace and Facebook and all that shit. So, like, you know, he's just off the grid. And one day, I get a call from my little sister, and she's crying. She's just bawling her eyes out. She goes, John, I just got a call from a hospital in Las Vegas. Wesley, because we call him by his middle name, Wesley's in the ICU. He's in a coma. He's been hit by a car. So I immediately tell my boss, I get in the car, and I go to pick up my mom, who I also don't talk to. You know, family problems. Guess who's a comedian? So I pick up my mom, and we're going to Vegas, and we make our way to the hospital. And I don't know if you guys notice about black families, like, there's one thing that's supposed to heal every arguing black family, and that's getting everybody in the room and then having a big meal. And that forgives all, okay? They even made a movie about it called Soul Food, and that's the gist. Like, if you make the right yams, everything will be okay. Do you understand? I've been working on a peach cobbler recipe for like the last 4 years. I just need to find the right amount of nutmeg, and then my mom will be proud of me. Like, that's where I'm at in my life. So we get in a room, and for some reason, my sister won't come in the room. She just won't do it. Like, there's no harmony. She's like, no, fuck that. I'm holding this grudge. So we're all just separate, kind of like arguing, trying to find out what happened in the last years of my brother's life. And here's the thing. I don't know how many guys listen to like murder documentaries or podcasts and shit like that. It's very entertaining to listen to that. It is a complete mindfuck to be a part of it, okay? I'm in the hospital room and I'm just meeting characters of my brother's life. And as a grown man, I'm asking some gambler named Minnesota Fat Joe what happened during the last year of my brother's life. And he was couch surfing. And, you know, he just wasn't prospering. It was like very stressful in life. And to be honest, we always thought stress would kill him. Like, that's the silent killer. We thought stress would kill him. But he was killed by the other silent killer. He was hit by a Prius. So, like, you know, it's just, we weren't that far off. So we're in this hospital, and his condition is worsening, and we just kept making these visits back and forth from LA to Vegas, LA to Vegas. And then it's becoming time where we have to make a decision. Like, you know, the bills are racking up. So we decide to take him off of life support. And we're just having this conversation. And then this nurse walks in the room. And she's wearing, like, you know, like, these bright fluorescent colors. She's got, like, all these bows on her hair, just like an angel. And she's like, you know, tell me about your brother. I'm like, well, he was caring. He was nice. He was giving. And then she goes, oh, he was giving? Actually, I'm from Organs United America, and I'm here to take your brother's organs. Dressed like a nurse. And I was like, you slippery bitch. Like, why didn't you just say that when you walked in the room? They don't walk in with a briefcase and like syringes like you think they would. They look like they're trying to be on your side. So I apologize to every woman I've ever said, let me get those guts. I know what it feels like now, you know? Like, I take that back. I should have bought you a drink first. I do apologize. So this is my brother, okay? This is the firstborn in the family, and we're like, no, we need to honor him. We need to make him feel welcome. This is a death. Let's do this right. Let's give him the funeral he deserves. We start looking for prices, and it's like $14,000 to bury him, and we don't have it. And then we're thinking, okay, this is Vegas. What's the cheapest way we can get rid of this body? Like, you know, we have to look at other options. So, me, my older sister, and my dad, we start Googling different cremation prices, and we start getting excited when we find places that are cheaper than another cremation place, you know? Like, I'm like, oh, I got 8,000, who's beating that? Like, we're just, it's a crazy vibe, And then you find out that people view the cremation business different. Like, there was one, his name was Barney's Cremation, and his motto was, we get it right the first time. And I'm like, who's out there undercooking these bodies where you pick up your loved one, it's like, you wanted on Ethel, medium rare, correct? Because, so we find a Groupon thing, and I mean, it's, it was under things to do, date night. So we find a Groupon thing, and you know, that's what we choose for how to dispose of this body. And the crazy thing about cremation is they literally take a human body, burn it to shit, and give you a bag of sand and say, you know, honor him, which is weird and surreal because you don't know if that sand is truly your loved one. I think they should do it like a car wash. You should see the body go through the various stages of fire, and you could converse with other people online, like, did you get the platinum wax on your brother? Because we did. It's just something to think about. And then they wave the rag when your body's done. I can sleep at night knowing it's him. That's all I'm saying. Sand is sand. Sand is sand. Oh man. So yeah. We get the sand. We take him to like this waterbed in Lancaster. We sprinkle his ashes. We say a couple words, and then that is basically the end of my brother. Okay. And then you think that would be enough to bring the family together, but no, we still don't talk. We still don't talk. Holidays are weird, and everything's just strange. But my brother dying taught me something, because this happened about 4 years ago. This happened, 2016. It happened about 7 years ago. I was 30, he was 40. And death wasn't real to me until that happened. I always thought, I'll live for 80, fuck goals. I'll just set them when I'm whenever ready. But when he died, it took on a new meaning. I really understood what life is and what life should be. So I started chasing goals. I started doing my comedy shit, started running, taking social life and love life seriously. So what I want to say to you is you got to do everything, live every day like it's your last, because one day you have your whole life in front of you and you know what you're going to do. And the next day,
that's it. That's our episode. I remember very clearly when John pitched this story to our show, and I read the pitch in our email, and it sounded very dark. It was about his brother dying, who he hadn't seen in 7 years, and having to figure out his death and all that. And I was like, John, are you sure that this is going to be funny? And he was like, this is going to be so funny. And he was right. He delivered. That was one of my favorite stories we've had on our show, because it's so dark, and I just love dark comedy. I think most of us do. That's why we are here. You can watch the video of this story on our YouTube channel, and you can find information about future shows and how to pitch your own story, and maybe just drop us a line about how you feel about the show, what you think. Send us your love and your hate. We will probably ignore the hate. On our website, it's funnynowstorytelling.com, and you can find a new episode every Monday on all podcast streaming platforms and, of course, YouTube. And special announcement, if you are in Los Angeles or any part of SoCal and you're willing to drive, tomorrow, Tuesday, November 14th, we have the last It's Funny Now of 2023 at the Crow in Santa Monica. Tickets are on sale on our website, itsfunnynowstorytelling.com. So I hope you make it to our live show, and that's where we get all these stories, and you will also see stories that don't make it to the show but are fantastic, of course. On the next episode, we have Vicky Uditz with her story, Nightmare in Van Nuys.
There were doors open along this hallway, and I saw identical rooms. Each one had an enormous bed and a flat-screen TV. This did not look like a medical establishment. It really looked like, office space that used to be crammed with desks for some fly-by-night substandard insurance company or shady import-export LLC. Every television was airing the same episode of the old TV show, Gomer Pyle.
Thanks for listening, and remember, tragedy plus time, it's funny now. See you next time.